You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hello, hodgepodge of honeys, holograms, and honchos hollering for hootenanny. Welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 204, and I'm your humble host, Karen, and we are your irrefutably irreplaceable and irresistible irregulars irradiating iridescence.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And I'm Chris.
I was wondering if you guys have been watching some HBO recently.
A lot.
Yeah.
I am very behind because I have a newborn, so I've been...
Oh, that's right.
Okay. I've been... studiously avoiding Westworld spoilers and Silicon Valley spoilers. And if it's on HBO, I've been avoiding spoilers for
it. Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel.
Oh, yeah. The one thing I have not been avoiding is a scintillating appearance by our host on the crossword tournament special.
Yes.
I was in... a segment of it's not like I got interviewed.
You finally got onto a sports television show.
I am on a sports television show,
but not for your sport.
No, Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel is an HBO show, and they did a segment on Will Shortz, the New York Times crossword editor and legend, and they filmed stuff at the American Crossword Puzzle Tournament that I went to. I was in a giant pencil suit. And
from it certainly looked like you were the only costumed person there as well.
I think that you had said that you anticipated a little bit more crossword cosplay than you found.
Yeah. I mean, there were a lot of people in like crossword like sweaters and, and dresses.
They
and
thought
stuff.
That they were dressing up.
Yeah. And I thought people were really going to go all out.
Maybe next year they will.
Yeah. Hopefully. It's more fun.
Right,
but
also,
you have to keep in mind that like part of the competition, you're kind of squeezed in. So you have to be very considerate of your costume.
Right.
You know, so a pencil kind of worked because I was very slim.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure where they're going to take this from here. The pencil, I mean, there's your obvious go-to.
Well, so here, I've actually, you know, while I was brainstorming for costumes, some of the things that are I think, very appropriate for the American Crossword Puzzle Tournament would be an Oreo. Because an Oreo is a very, very very popular clue. Because they're good letters. O-R-E-O. You can be... So I was thinking of wearing shorts that says Will all over them.
Okay.
Uh-huh, and so I'm like, Will Shorts.
Why would you give that away?
Oh, it's too clever. It's okay. It's okay. Next time. Oh, maybe a whole bunch of people will show up in Will Shorts.
Yeah.
Actually, the night before of the actual competition, you know, there's like a nice get-together dinner, you know, with all the competitors and all the past champions and the organizers. And I actually... devised a shirt. There are a lot of weird bird names, crossword clues, like urns, or there are a lot of them because they have good letters. And one of the birds is the tit bird.
Okay.
And so I thought it was so clever. So I made my own t-shirt and I put two tit birds on the front and I kind of wore it to dinner. I'm like, oh, surely people will know what I am. Yeah. And no one knew.
And they don't know what it looks like.
Oh, right. Maybe. That's true.
Just
It's just,
like
it's a game of code at a certain level. You don't need to know
what it is. Yeah.
Well, it's like Scrabble players. Players don't know what the words mean.
Exactly.
They just know that it is a valid word.
Crossword
puzzlers is a step up. You actually do have to know what the word means.
But you don't need to know what it looks like.
Right. You could use Sidney Poitier's name for 30 years in a crossword and not be able to pick him out of a photo of two people.
So check it out. It's on Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel. It's a very good segment.
It
talks about Will Shortz. It talks about puzzling and competition aspect, the kind of sportsmanship of the competition. It was very wise and very inspiring. Especially because the two other segments of that episode were kind of depressing. So this was a little bit uplifting at the end of that episode.
You were the feel-good.
So check it out. Yeah, I was the feel-good coda to that episode. Cool. Well, without further ado, let's jump into our first general trivia segment, Pop Quiz Hotshot.
What do we got?
Do you guys want Genus 4 or music singles?
Music singles.
See, I'm going to vote for Genus 4. Oh, I like the grab bag.
All kinds of
okay, Dana, you're the tiebreaker vote. You know, we'll just use the other card for the next time.
let's do music this
okay.
time.
Okay, music singles. Here we go. I have...
And Colin, you'll get your wish in 1 week's time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So get your buzzers ready. Listeners, get your mental buzzers ready or your car honking horn.
Honk the horn.
Honk the horn your car real loud.
Yeah.
Just lean on that sucker.
Here we go. Blue Wedge. What band was Jim Morrison asked to join before the Doors were formed?
Oh, that's a good trivia question.
Chris.
The Rolling Stones.
Incorrect.
He was based in
I've
LA.
Never heard of this band.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Wow. But I've also not heard of many bands.
So it really gives us nothing.
Yeah.
It is the Beatles.
I don't know this one. That's
Steppenwolf.
It is.
What is it?
Rick and the Ravens.
Huh. Okay.
Wow.
No, that's obscure. That's, don't worry.
I do not.
Yeah.
It's not ringing a bell for me.
Yeah.
Maybe not, if you're a hardcore Doors fan. Maybe.
Not in the punch bowl.
I'm gonna have to look up Rick and the Ravens and see if maybe they turned into somebody else or something. Mm. All right, that's a good one.
All right, Pink Wedge. What Shakira hit dethroned Gwen Stefani's "Holla Back, Girl" as the most played pop song in June of 2006? Nah. Name a hit, Dana.
The Hips Don't Lie.
Correct. Nah. Hips Don't Lie, featuring Wyclef Jean. Yellow Wedge. What Grammy Award recognizes an artist's overall past and present achievements?
Oh, so it's like, what is the name of their lifetime achievement award, basically?
They have a special brand.
Yeah, what is the Grammys? Okay. I know the Academy Award one, but I don't know the Grammy
one. I'll throw you in a clue. Okay. This is what a Disney Corporation also gives out this title to people for their past and present achievements.
The Disney Award.
Chris.
No, that was
Colin. Sorry.
The Grammy Master.
It is the Legend Award.
Okay. All right.
Award. Lavender Wedge.
Ooh.
What type of rap comes out of southern U.S. cities such as Houston, Birmingham, and Miami?
What year was this card written?
What kind of rap?
Are they looking for
Outcast?
Crunk? Nelly? Are they looking for...
That's L.A. Though,
Crunk is L.A.
What are they looking for out of the...
Is it Dirty South?
Yeah, that's...
Yes!
Dirty South. Yeah, all right.
Dirty South.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Lime Green Wedge. What famous tropical rock singer is also an author, restaurateur, and clothing entrepreneur, and also a Broadway entrepreneur?
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, sorry.
Whoop.
I think everyone.
Yes, it's James Buffett. Jameson Buffett.
Jimmy Buffett. What were his? A restaurateur.
So it says author, restaurateur, and clothing entrepreneur.
Yeah. Clothing. Okay.
I added the Broadway musical.
Got it. Okay.
That's recent.
Mm.
All right, last question. Orange Wedge.
Wait. Hang on. I'm ignorant. What's his Broadway?
What do you think?
It must be a Margaritaville, the musical, something. Oh, okay.
Sure. Close enough.
Yeah. And is it just like a what do they call like a jukebox musical or whatever?
Yes,
okay.
Yes,
look at me throwing around the lingo.
Yeah, that was good.
All right.
In the same vein as Mama Mia, Rock of Ages.
You know what?
Are they doing
Jersey
a Mama Mia too?
Yeah.
Are they? Those are the same ABBA songs.
Yeah, did they write some new oldies?
I don't know. Maybe, okay. I don't
tap
know.
Into
I'm not
side
sure.
B.
I'm not sure how that's going to go. Yeah. Hmm.
That's an interesting thing because Mamma Mia 2 is the movie sequel to the movie Mamma Mia, which is based on the Broadway. So there's no Broadway 2.
You know, I think that there is probably a quiz there about Broadway sequels somewhere, but they don't do well.
Yeah.
There's Love Never Dies, which is the sequel to Phantom of the Opera.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
100% original? I mean,
100% original, did not do this.
Interesting.
Huh. Yeah.
All right, last question, Marigold Wedge. What singer-songwriter wants to know how he's supposed to live without you?
Is that Michael Bolton?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
Michael Bolton.
Yeah, I did not have the conviction to say it very strongly.
Right.
You want to know a crazy thing I know about Michael Bolton now?
What?
He babysat Paula Abdul.
What? No.
That's a great tidbit.
When Paula Abdul was a child, he babysat
her. No, adult. Yeah.
they was have he like that a family big of friend? Age I need... difference?
Yeah.
It doesn't even have to be that big of a difference. You know, she's like a...
True, you mean 10 or 11.
Year old and a 7-year-old.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. All right. Good job, brains.
Well, this time, Karen, I actually had a real inspiration for the episode.
I don't have to sell the fake time.
Well, you know, sometimes I do a little embellishment.
Be creative.
I'm going to be going camping in a couple weeks. Long-time listeners probably hear me talk about this every
year. Annual big
my
trip.
Summer camping trip. And also,
Colin writes extensive trip notes.
That's right.
Yes, about his camping trips.
I tried to. In fact, this year I bought a waterproof trip note. You know, it's like the specially treated journal, and I have the pressurized, the Fisher Space Pen that writes upside down, underwater, freezing temperatures. Yes, exactly. The same one. I'm prepared for any scenario now. It could be pouring down rain, and I'll be sitting there, you know, raining. Scribbling my trip notes. Yeah. It's raining. I'm sad. I've gone camping in Utah, Arizona, Nevada before.
Where are you
over.
Going this time?
So this time we are going on this trip, my camping buddy and I. We're going to be camping in California for the first time. We decided just going to stick a little bit closer to home, literally here, and stay in California and enjoy some West Coast camping, which I've done a little bit before with my wife, but never on my big summer camping trip. So we're driving up. We're going to be camping in Lassen Volcanic National Park, which is pretty cool. And then we're going up way up toward the northern part of the state, almost up to the Oregon border and camping up there. But so I got to thinking about just this great West Coast experience I'm having, I realized we could talk about the West, just anything in the West. It's just so
going different. West,
going West, heading West, West Coast lifestyle. That qualifies as a legitimate, honest inspiration for this week's episode.
So this week, go West. This is what we'll do. Start this off, we're going to start here, San Francisco Bay Area, and as we know, it is Silicon Valley, it is you know, UC Berkeley, Stanford, a lot of things have been invented here. Tech-related, or computer-related, or science-related, because of all these institutions we have in the area. But what about the weird, not-so-important stuff? Well, let's say not-so-important stuff. But, like, what about things that we, you know, kind of take for granted? And so here I have a quiz of weird things invented here in the San Francisco Bay Area that we can be proud of. And they are not...
Or ashamed of.
Proud of. I would say most of them are proud of. Okay. So as a general, not clue, but disclaimer. So it's not tech or app or computer.
All right. That's huge, though, to rule that out.
Floppy disks were invented, you know, and I believe here the computer mouse was also, you know, so none of those things.
Okay.
And not a lot of foodie stuff. You know,
like sourdough.
Irish coffee. Yeah. A fortune cookie that we've talked about before.
Yeah, right.
So there might be some food-related stuff. But these are... Okay. So those two realms, it's very San Francisco like kind of stereotypes. The tech and the foodie stuff.
Yep.
Not in this quiz. These are some weird little things that you probably didn't know was invented in San Francisco. Guys, grab your buzzers. Let's start off with an easy one. So one of the most famous things that we know that's invented here is Levi Strauss denim, right? Mm-hmm. But what feature of the jeans exactly was Levi Strauss's original patent for? Oh, everybody.
The rivets.
The tiny little rivets. It's not to say that jeans didn't exist before. It's just the rivets helped reinforce pockets. So there would be like denim, and people kept ripping the pockets because they're putting their hands through it. So Levi Strauss thought to reinforce it with the rivets. The idea of this 20th century invention came to Joseph Friedman in a sweet shop in San Francisco, and it features a concertina hinge.
Okay, idea. Oh,
Chris.
The bendy straw.
It is the bendy straw.
Yes, of course.
The concertina is like a accordion little accordion. And invented right in San Francisco. In a soda shop.
And now being outlawed as well. Yeah. It comes full circle.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, the plastic straw
thing. I think they have paper bendy straws,
they do.
Right?
But I think paper straws just in general
are terrible.
We know. Maybe they'll make one of those corn plastic or, compostable bendy straws. So originally how he did it was he was with a family member who was a kid, either his daughter or niece. There, and she's drinking soda from a paper straw and was having trouble with it because she's so small. Mm. And so his paper back then, he took dental floss and he made little grooves so it would bend. And so, it kind of started out as a paper straw. Hmm. All right. The USDA has very strict rules about what actually goes into this preserved food item mix invented by William Vere Cruz, a food scientist and wine researcher at UC Berkeley.
Very specific rules. And to what is the product? It's a
preserved food item mix.
Preserved food item mix.
USDA has very strict rules about the composition.
Okay, so it means it's like a regional protected something or
nope.
No,
Nationwide, okay. USDA.
But
Dana,
trail mix?
No, not trail mix, but you're close. It is a mix of things. It is.
I was going to say granola, but I could tell you were saying something else.
Fruit cocktail. Your lunchroom fruit cocktail, Dole, whatever, or canned. USDA has specifically 30-50% has to be this fruit, and it's like the makeup of it is. That's why when you eat fruit cocktail, why do I have one cherry? I'm always for one cherry because it is designated. It cannot be called a fruit cocktail if
that makes sense.
If you don't have a cherry,
if you don't follow through the composition chart,
that's interesting. And it can't just be all apple. You're like, wait, man, what?
Because then you have to market it or advertise it as a preserved apple.
That's fascinating.
To say fruit cocktail has to be those things. That's why it's very consistent.
Man, I associate, I don't know if you guys like me, I associate fruit cocktail with summer camp. It's just like as a kid, like it was like always our little treat at the end of summer camp, that little, just that clingy, sweet
syrup. I like the pears.
School lunch.
You can taste the graininess of it.
Yes.
It was like my least favorite dessert at school lunch. I was like, oh, it's fruit cocktail. Oh, sorry to poop on your summer camp.
Oh, I didn't say. Yeah, you know what? I didn't say it was a good nostalgia. It was more just like it reminded me of it. Yeah.
In 1960s, Wilfred, quote, Bill the Gill Winkenbach, an Oakland businessman, created the GOPPPL, now more commonly known as what? I will give more clues.
So something nationally known.
So
created in Oakland.
He was a limited partner of the Oakland Raiders.
It generally means you have a limited financial interest.
He invented this.
And I'll tell you now.
Is it like a stadium foods or something? Or
she said not foods.
Oh, not
Chris.
Foods. Yeah, you're right.
The jockstrap.
I'm just riding on Dana's coattail here, but maybe the weird number
that's
one finger.
No, I'll tell you what GOPPPL is, and once I say it, you guys will probably know.
Okay.
Greater Oakland Professional Pigskin Prognosticators League.
Gambling?
Now more commonly known as what?
Fantasy football?
Fantasy football. 1960s. The GOPPPL and participants of the draft brought the game to a sports bar in Oakland where a lot of patrons of that bar gather there for pub trivia. And it gained steam from word of mouth and having all these people meet up for drafts and stuff. that kind of started to spread grassroots. But it didn't really catch on as fast because it was kind of complicated and manual and paper, and they had to like revise a lot of the scoring. Nowadays, it's so easy.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
I'm on an app. I just pick whoever, like looking at the scores. Back then, who knows?
That's you can really tell cool. he's whimsical because of the acronym is so long.
Go like,
Papapel. Yeah, and it's pigskin prognosticators. It's like, this is an in-group. This is like a
closed system. It's the intersection of sports fans and nerds, the sports nerd.
And one last one, also sports related. They all have weird names. Crazy George Henderson.
Okay.
That is his name.
That's his legal name. His given name.
Yeah, his mother was
crazy.
Like,
quote George Henderson.
He like prefers George.
No, I go by George.
Birth name is crazy.
Only my mother calls me crazy.
It's with a K.
Yeah.
Oh,
crazy George.
That's
Henderson.
How you can tell he's really crazy.
Crazy George Henderson was a professional cheerleader.
Okay.
Invented what at an Oakland A's game? Chris.
The splits accidentally.
Incorrect.
Colin, you buzz.
The foam dome.
Incorrect.
This is the foam finger?
No. But this.
Karen, is the foam finger anywhere in this quiz?
We should look that up one day.
So you say created accidentally, did you say?
No. So here's the thing. A little bit more backstory. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to tell you what it is yet. Okay. But it might have been done at other stadiums.
This is
the first time it was televised.
Okay.
Colin.
Yeah. The Wave.
The Wave. Okay. Crazy George Henderson.
When was that?
So this was not that long ago. This was in the 80s, I believe. Yeah,
wow.
It's 80. So it was a televised Oakland A's game against the Yankees in 81. However, so this was the first time televised. However, he got the idea because he was professional cheerleader, as in he's not with the pom-poms. He's like one of those rally kind of like, you know, like Flava Flava, hype man kind of.
And sometimes they kind of start unofficial.
Yeah. But he has cheered before for, I believe it was a hockey game somewhere else. And he was trying to get... he was trying to do like a call and response with both sides of the stadium. So he wanted one side to like stand up and yell and the other side then stand up and yell. And obviously like people got confused and then it kind of had a delayed response. So you see a little bit part of the Wave. And even when he did it, the first time it was televised, people still had a lot of false starts and didn't really understand what he was trying to do. Now we all know, you know, can you imagine the first time it's like, what do? We just stand up, you know. Crazy.
That's
crazy.
That to me is such a '90s thing. I mean, I don't think they really do it anymore.
They do.
No, okay, I'm not gonna say they don't do it anymore, but there was a time when it was a thing. Like any football game, you went to, you could expect that at one point you would be doing the Wave. And like, I feel like we've passed that. Maybe I don't know.
'90s was really big on like group activities, like the Macarena,
that's
right?
True.
Like,
that's true.
Follow directions. You know,
two versions of the electric slide.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have guessed that it was from the 80s. Like in my mind, I'm like, oh, take me out to the ball game is like an old song,
and then it's
related to the Wave. But I guess it's been around most of my life, almost all of my life.
Yeah.
Hard to imagine a pre-Wave.
I know.
I mean, if we could just get deep for a minute here,
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Some quirky, non-tech, non-foodie San Francisco Bay Area inventions.
That's good.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So on a previous episode, I would have come into this episode talking about the video game Oregon Trail,
yes.
Which is about you know, U.S. Citizens, you know, migrating from the east to the west, coming out to California, coming out to Oregon, coming out to
seek
Utah if you're a Mormon, you know.
Maybe dying of dysentery.
Along these trails. Yeah, maybe dying of dysentery along the way. Because, of course, that was a popular way to die in the classic game that a lot of, if you went through the American school system in the 80s or 90s, you probably got to play this game, Oregon Trail. But I already talked about that. Talked about where the game came from, all that kind of stuff. You can
Minneapolis, right?
Yes. Yeah. So you can go look that up on a previous episode if you want to. But I decided that for this episode about really going west, I would talk about the actual people who actually went on the Oregon Trail, which is, I mean, you know, people in the mid-1800s decided they were living on the East Coast, and if they maybe felt that land was getting too expensive out there, things were, you know, or if they really, even if they had it good, but they heard that the West offered even more prosperity, even cheaper land.
FOMO.
You know, the gold rush, you know, was sort of part of that, right? Yeah, FOMO. Yeah, serious FOMO. The Oregon Trail was actually, by the way, a trail. Previously, it was just like, you know, really hardy people like fur traders, traders, things like that would be able to get out there to California. But they created a trail, an actual, you know, physical trail for people to follow if you were just regular people going out to the West. The big joke about the Oregon Trail game is you have died of dysentery, right? Everybody always seems to die of dysentery or whatever.
A sidetrack question.
Yeah?
What is actually dysentery?
This is not a sidetrack question at all.
Oh, okay.
So dysentery is
a disease.
You get either, it can be caused by a lot, it's sort of a group of a lot of things, but basically it's you have either, you know, a viral or a bacterial issue in your intestines, which causes you to have bloody diarrhea. And also if you were like not in a city or not did not have access to good medical care or good water or things like that to drink and rehydrate yourself and get better, you would probably die of dysentery if you were, say, in the middle of wherever, Wyoming, on your way to California and there was nothing around.
Okay.
And yeah, in fact, best estimates that we have is about 1 in 10 people died on the Oregon Trail. 1 in 10.
That's huge.
Yeah. So if you massive.
If you have a family in a wagon,
somebody was going to die. These were city folk in some cases. These were not hardened pioneer people.
Yeah.
But they
had done 10 years of pioneering. Yeah.
This is like a guy and his wife and their family. And, you know, maybe they had been sort of okay in the East Coast. Dad wanted to go into the West and, you know, live the life in Oregon or California or something like that. And so it was on the trail. And it was not, I think a lot of people, because they had the Conestoga wagons, right? The covered wagons that you always see on the trail. And I think everybody has the idea that this was like a Winnebago and that that everybody rode in the wagon. Dad was up with the horse and you're riding it back. Because these wagons, first of all, they were full of all the stuff.
Yeah.
Second of all, they did not have shocks on them, right? They didn't have springs. Yeah, so they had springs underneath the driver, but that's it. So the rest of it was just wood on axles going over dirt.
Jolting.
It would have been the worst ride in the whole world. And so everybody walked. Whoever was driving the oxen drove the wagons.
Yeah,
but everybody else walked alongside.
It sounds miserable.
That sucks.
You walked a long walk.
From Mississippi
to Oregon.
Walking. It was miserable. It took about 6 months.
And
the thing is, everybody started at the exact, they started at the spring thaw.
Yeah.
Right? In Independence, Missouri, because that was where everybody started. Fast. That was where the trails all began from.
Okay.
And you had to get through. I mean, you know the Donner Party.
Yeah.
Right? Yes.
The Donner Party. That was an Oregon Trail
group
of
people. They ended up in the mountains, and when the snows hit, and they were stuck there.
Yep.
And then they ate each other to survive. And that was
a race against winter.
It was a race against winter. You had to get there before winter. You had about 6 months to get there before the snow started falling. Sick. You were in big trouble.
Walking for 6 months.
And you're not in comfy shoes.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Of the 1 in 10 people who died on the Oregon Trail, diseases in general are pretty much the biggest killer.
Okay.
The number one was not dysentery, it was cholera.
Mm.
And a lot of this, so it cholera is like dysentery. It's an intestinal disease. It's bacterial specifically, spread by unsanitary conditions. So you'd have these big groups of people all going out, all bathing in cholera infested rivers, then drinking, you know, the water,
cholera.
And then they all get cholera.
It was
bad too. You would, when you got cholera, you would die hours after you developed symptoms. So you could start the day. You could start the day.
Okay. Fine.
You would have it for a couple of days, but you wouldn't know it. And then you develop symptoms and then die. It's like you could start the day.
It's brutal.
Looking fine. Feeling perfectly fine and be dead that night. Some people got scurvy, and generally they'd get scurvy after they got to Oregon because they would have contracted it, you know, along the way, not having any vitamin C.
Mm.
But then once they got there, they still don't have any vitamin C and they die of scurvy.
Because they've only got whatever they brought with them to farm or whatever.
Sure.
Did they understand scurvy back then?
They did. Right? Oh, they totally did.
Pirates did.
Right. Yeah, they knew needed that stuff, but it's like they, you know, they might run out. They might not be able to get it. Yeah. So, quiz. So okay. We've now done diseases. What other things do you think might have killed people on the old Oregon Trail? Throw some stuff out there.
Well, animals. I mean, yeah, just animals, horse accidents, encounters.
Oh,
encounters.
Sure, let's talk about accidents.
Yeah.
Just accidents. Here's two major accidents that could occur. Well, first of all, there's drowning.
Oh,
because,
right.
Of course, you had to cross rivers.
Course,
there's no bridges.
Yeah.
Now, eventually, they'd start building ferries, building bridges. And so, towards the end, if you were going in, like, the 1860s or whatever, maybe there'd be more ferries and bridges. But towards the beginning, you had to... Everybody just had to cross. You had to ford the river. Never works out in Oregon Trail.
I'm hoping you're not going to say crushed beneath a wagon wheel.
Well, not yet, because I'm still on drowning.
Oh, okay.
The other one... that I wanted to mention was shootings, getting
other
shot.
People, yeah.
Being shot.
Of course.
And you'd think that it would be because everybody is super on edge, goes crazy, and gets into fights and shoots each other. Not as much. Most of the shooting deaths were accidental shootings.
Geez.
Because you have these
hunting
greenhorns. They're all carrying guns. And here's the thing. Everybody is concerned about, when you're walking along, what if we get attacked by those savage Native Americans?
Yeah.
I better have my gun on me. So people are walking along all these uneven trails for days, weeks, months with a loaded gun strapped across their shoulder. They don't know how to use it. They are much more liable to just shoot their child in the head accidentally with the gun. Also, or they put the guns loaded on the wagon, the wagon's bouncing along, guns start shooting out the wagon and hitting people. So yeah, accidental shootings, big killer. As it turns out, there's a lot of back and forth over how much of a threat was it that there were Native Americans, you know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
It certainly does seem like there were a fair few people who were killed in terms of altercations with the native population of America, except A, it seems like the pioneers, the travelers, may have killed more Native Americans
than killed them
because they'd see them and be like, let's go kill them. You know what I mean? They'd instigate the fights.
I believe it.
Yeah.
Like or the Native Americans would attack because the last time a group of wagons came
they instigated the fights.
Everyone just has an itchy trigger.
So it's not like they're out
finger.
There. Yeah. Everybody thinks the other person is a danger, so you end up in a fight.
All right. Dangerous people wandering down.
But there are, of course, stories of Native Americans helping people as well, or traveling with the trails and helping them out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, there's run over by a wagon wheel. Thanks, Colin. Very common cause of death.
Man.
Run over by the wagons.
How fast is it going, though?
So here's the thing.
But they weigh so much.
Not fast. Yeah. So they're not fast. They're like 2 miles an hour. but they have no brakes.
Oh, I see.
You can't just stop them when they're going.
It's a
they're
horse.
Going.
Yeah.
So you know, if you, sometimes just people just are just in the wrong place and they get crushed by the wagon, which can't stop in front of them. Sometimes people are trying to get on or off the wagon, you know, and then they just slip and they go underneath, and that's it. But then also, it's like, yeah, sometimes like literally, you know, it runs over your head or whatever. But like, also, if it runs over like your foot,
you're still screwed.
You're still gonna die. Yeah. Just a lot slower because you don't have a doctor to do anything with your muddy, infected, you know, crushed foot.
Shattered.
Yeah. It's done. Oh my God.
I feel
so
bad for laughing. I don't know why.
It's just like there was a certain amount of, like, I'm sure that some people were in like dire straits and like this was the only way they could survive is to like go to the West and buy super cheap land. But like for a lot of people, it strikes me as like a choice
fancy thing that
they made. So are stories of like, you know, wives with their husbands getting halfway there and going, I don't want to do this anymore. Our kid's head got run over by the wagon wheel. Like, what are we doing? What is the point?
My wife at one point fell into just a really fixated point on the Donner Party. And just, you know, the travelers coming west. And in one of her books she was reading, you know, it made the point that as you were going across the early parts of the trail, sometimes you would just see jettison stuff.
Oh, yeah.
That people, they get there, they realize, you would see people set out. And I apologize if you're going to get to this, Chris, but like
I
grandfather clocks.
Oh, yeah.
They would load up the grandfather clock on the wagon, and you get, you know, 4 days into it, and you're like, what the hell am I thinking? And you ditch the grandfather clock.
Because they're like, we can't possibly leave all these things.
This is
behind.
Not just a joyride out to the West Coast.
That's
dishes, china sets. I mean, there was a whole kind of like sub cottage industry of people scavenging.
Yeah, absolutely.
It seems to me that in general, the further along you made it on the trail, the more likely it was that you were going to make it.
Okay.
For multiple reasons, like maybe things got a little bit more spread out. You weren't like sort of in close contact with people who had diseases. You got better with your gun.
Yeah.
Like past a certain, they always say like, you know, past a certain point, people figure out how to use their guns so they don't accidentally shoot each other.
If everything goes right, your day is trudging on the trail at 2 miles an hour and just hoping that you make it with nobody dying.
But you know, because they were on the trail, I mean, it's also like they were on this trail for so long that like, in addition, people like husbands and wives or, you know, boys and girls, you know, met on the trail and there were people who got married on the trail. People who had babies on the trail, you know, and they would name their babies after like geographical, like beautiful nature.
Sierra. If it weren't for them, the creation of our West Coast would have become what it has become.
Someone had to do it first.
Someone had
to do it first.
That's right. And by the way, this all ended in late 1860s when the, basically it ended when the first transcontinental railroad was finished.
Right.
Then everybody was just like, why don't I just take the train? And then they all started just taking the train.
Wow, that was really interesting about the Oregon Trail.
Thank you, Dana.
It's crazy. I have a quiz for you guys about the West. Maybe it's a little lighter.
than the ways to die.
Yeah, yeah.
You have fewer wagon crushing related bits.
Skull crushing.
I had some questions about that, but I cut them luckily before the quiz. Let's do buzz in.
Oh, right.
Quiz.
Okay.
All right.
All right. We'll kick it off with this. Question number one. Elphaba Thropp is otherwise known by this name.
You know, me and Chris know.
Yeah.
We want to see if you know.
Colin. I didn't even hear the word. What is it?
Elphaba.
Elphaba.
Thropp.
Thropp is better known
by this name. And it has West in the name as well.
It does.
The title.
Huh.
Do you know where her name comes from?
Yeah.
Her first name?
Uh-huh. Oh,
is that going to be part of the quiz?
That's going to be, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I
oh, okay.
I it's got to be something Harry Potter or Disney or what?
You're definitely in the realm magic related.
Okay.
Broadway
fantasy
related.
Character.
Broadway
related.
Jeez. I'm going to have to pass. Enlighten me.
Elphaba Thropp is the Wicked Witch of the West. From Wicked. From Wicked specifically.
Yeah.
Right.
Because it's not in Frank.
That's not
no, Frank it's Oz. Not in the original.
Frank Oz,
it's not. Her name is
L. Frank Baum. L. Frank Baum. Frank Oz.
Yeah, Elphaba comes from LFB. Elphaba.
So what's LFB?
That's L. Frank Baum.
L. Frank Baum.
Oh,
yeah. Elphaba.
Mm-hmm. All right. Wicked Witch of the.
She's the Wicked Witch of the West.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. The main,
well, there's two.
The East died right away.
Yeah, but okay, let's stay on the theme here.
Yeah, she's from
the North.
Yeah, she's from Wicked, the Life and Times of the Wicked Witch of the West.
Throp.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll file that away.
Yeah, it might come up.
Alphaba. LFB.
Yeah.
That's good.
All right, question number two. The HBO series Westworld is based on a 1973 film written and directed by this author. Karen.
Oh, are we, all right,
we could all do it. Everybody knew it.
Michael Crichton.
Yes.
Michael Crichton.
You know, I thought it would be like a good guess of Stephen King because he has written a lot of books that have become movies at some point. But the Westworld is about an amusement park where the robots come to life and kill people.
Yep.
And Michael Crichton also wrote Jurassic Park.
Yes.
Yep. So that's a little bit his jam too.
He's still thinking about that.
Adult park.
He's like, how can this go wrong?
And however, this wasn't a book by Michael Crichton. Michael Crichton wrote the screenplay. This is his first screenplay.
Yes. He wrote and directed it.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Well, it's because he was flush, I believe, off the success of The Andromeda Strain,
I
think was his first. Oh. And he, from what I understand, he basically had the clout to say to the studio, I'm going to write and direct this movie, and you're going to let me do it. And they're like, okay, Mr. Crichton. And he did, and it was moderately successful.
He made a sequel.
It's not a I don't know. I know it's a cult hit. I've watched it pretty recently. Yeah. It's very corny.
Yeah, it's not
the second one.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've seen the second one, it would have been. Yeah, I've seen it when I was a kid. It's been many years.
I mean, he's a bold man.
Yeah.
I think he was married like 5 or 6 times, and he was a doctor. Like he died in 2008, but he's prolific. Okay, question number three. While the eastern side of this island has become a sovereign state, the western side is a province of Indonesia.
Oh, is that Borneo?
No.
Wait. Say that the western side is
a province of Indonesia. The eastern side became a sovereign state in 1999.
I thinking country or island?
Well, Karen, go.
Singapore.
Nope.
Is it Sumatra?
No.
Papua New Guinea?
No.
I'm not going to guess third.
It is Timor.
Timor. East Timor. Oh, right, of course.
East Timor is a sovereign state. West Timor is a province of Indonesia.
You know what the flag looks like.
Question number four. This Irish boy band was originally signed by Simon Cowell.
Westlife.
I have never heard of this band. That is so interesting
about Westlife is they were huge in the late 90s
They're
and
huge,
early 2000s.
Like global success.
Global.
Other than the U.S.
Yeah. Really?
Guinness
That's
Book
how
of
I
World
knew
Records
yeah.
level. Like huh. seven consecutive huh. number one singles.
They're British
UK.
Born or they're...
They're from Irish. Ireland.
Oh, yeah. you said
Yeah. But they're like huge... But they did not hit here. Like, they just didn't catch on. They had one song here. But, you know, we had our own boy bands at the same time.
Yeah, that's
like
right.
Like Backstreet Boys and NSYNC.
They showed up, and as a nation, we're like, we're full.
Well,
we have enough boy bands.
There were American ones.
I think there were earlier. So it was like, Take That was kind of the big research. Like, you know, there's New Kids on the Block, and then which kind of inspired Take That in the UK. Take That had global success, except for the States, because the States were kind of investing in their own boy bands. But Westlife was... That's how I know it, because I'm from Taiwan. It was
Westlife.
Huge.
All right.
They formed in 98.
People, I mean, like, in Chinese pop songs, they were singing Chinese versions of Westlife songs.
Yeah,
it was like they're so big. They were so big.
Yeah, it's just funny how... Massive, world. But we're like, I didn't get that one.
Yeah,
I do find compartmentalized fame very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Question number five. After 155 years of continuous service, Western Union stopped offering this service in 2006.
155 years of continuous.
Yeah. Colin.
Telegram service.
Telegrams.
Oh.
So they started in 1851 as the New York and Mississippi Valley Printing Telegraph Company, and that was their main product. And by 2006, they only had like 20,000 telegrams in the whole year, so they turned that off, and now it's a money transfer service.
I honestly, I would have been shocked just to find, shocked to find out that it went into the 2000s even.
Who are I wonder if it was ships. I wonder if it was maybe ships. I couldn't find like the answer. I was curious too.
Like who's still sending telegrams?
Yeah. Who was doing that?
So somewhere like with no like cell
whimsical.
Service or,
yeah.
it's
it's Wes Anderson.
Yeah, it's very
Victorian cosplay.
Yeah, it's a 27-year-old in Williamsburg.
Yeah,
a fax machine. Now I'll send it by telegram. Thank you.
He fashions himself a dandy.
Yeah.
We are out of mustache wax. Stop.
He's on his velocipede.
Full stop.
Yeah. All right. Last question. What is the first full name of the entertainer who was West Philadelphia born and raised?
So it's not his normal first name?
Yeah, what's his full first name?
Oh, it's not...
Karen.
It's not William.
Wilfred Smith.
Oh. No.
Close.
I didn't know it was not William.
It's not William.
We're talking about Will Smith,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we're talking about... Okay. Yeah.
All right. Huh, I don't know.
It's a dorky Will name.
Ooh. Wilhelm.
Willard.
Yes.
Willard.
His name is Willard Carroll Smith Jr.
You better be a junior with a name like Willard. Yeah.
Willard Carroll.
Yeah.
Apologies to all Willards who are listening to this show.
West Philadelphia.
Let's bring back Willard.
Willard Scott. Mm-hmm. West Philadelphia Born and Raised is a reference to Fresh Prince of Bel-Air's theme song.
Indeed.
For people who are younger than 30.
We need to spell it out.
Younger than 20.
Yeah.
Well,
but it ended in like the early 90s.
Younger than a certain age and older than a certain age.
Yeah. But on the show, he was playing a character named William.
Oh, I see.
They didn't keep... Yeah. But it was loosely based on him.
I feel lied to.
I kind of feel lied to as well. It's like he wanted to...
But he never... Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right, because they actually do, in the show, they do call him William.
Yeah, they do. Mm-hmm. It comes up. So that's why you're like, oh, it must be William Smith.
I have some fun William-related trivia. So before the show recording...
William Smith?
Before the recording started, we were talking about Solo, the new Star Wars movie.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We were digging Donald Glover's take on Lando Calrissian, of course.
I loved it.
Originally portrayed by Billy Dee Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what Billy Dee Williams' full legal given birth name is?
William Williams? No.
Yeah, well, first of all, you're like, wait a minute.
Bill.
Yes.
Billy D.
He's William December Williams Jr.
Whoa!
Yes. William December Williams. Billy D is December. Yeah.
Incredible.
Wow. Junior.
Junior, yes. William Williams. Yeah. William December.
What's a Don Calrissian?
It's a slick kind of name.
It is.
Not as slick as Billy D.
Yeah, no, that's slicker,
Billy D.
for
Williams,
sure.
Yeah.
So that's one of my fun little Billy D. Williams bit of trivia. That might be my only bit of Billy D. Williams trivia.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we have one more question.
Okay, let's do it.
What percentage of humans live in the Western Hemisphere? Is it 20, 40, or 80% of humans?
What is considered the Western Hemisphere?
Yeah, like, I think that's part of the question.
Prime meridian to the international dateline, I guess.
Yeah.
40%.
25.
I'm going to say whatever the lowest one is.
It is 20%.
Yeah,
it's like 18% of the human population.
It doesn't have Asia.
Wow. Well, yes. Sure.
So Western Hemisphere is North America, South America, and West Africa.
Oh, okay.
But that's only 18% of the human population. There's 82% live on the other side.
Well, there's more landmass on the other side, too. Yeah.
True.
Yeah. But
in China.
I mean, China and India have a lot of people.
Yeah, quite a few.
I thought that was interesting.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
That's a low number.
It's kind of like, you know, almost a microcosm that we have here in our country, where overwhelmingly more people are in the eastern half of our country, these United States, than there are out on the west. And, I mean, if you ever look at, like, a population density map, I mean, it's pretty staggering, just these vast swaths of all throughout the west and, you know, except for along the coast, it's hardly populated. populated compared to, I don't know, the East Coast. I don't know. When I'm driving around the West on these camping trips, it really drives home to me like, wow, there's nobody out here.
Cool. Good job, you guys.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pile-ups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Well, I've got a quick little eventually word nerd segment here for you guys.
Yeah,
I'm going to get there. We're going to get there. You guys know I love the etymology and the language related stuff. So whenever we come across something that I feel like our fans might know this, but I need to make sure they know it.
Okay.
This is one of those where it's just I couldn't sleep at night if I thought that some of our listeners might not be aware of this little bit of the English language history.
Wow. Even I might not.
Yeah.
So let's talk about cattle branding. I mean, I was thinking about the Old West, right?
Yeah.
And the first, I have to say, this is totally true. One of the first images that popped in my mind was like of a Gary Larson, like Far Side cartoon of it's the cowboys, the cowpokes sitting around the fire, and he's got the cattle brand in the fire heating it up. And I'm going to botch the joke, of course, but the brand is huge. It's like, this cattle belongs to Leroy Jenkins. And if you find it, you know, and the cow is in the background, like looking at the brand, you know. I was thinking about what a common trope that was, at least in the stuff that I used to see, of like the Old West, of like you got the branding iron in the hot, you get all hot and you stick it on the poor cattle or other livestock and, you know, the steam and everything.
It was like so barbaric.
I mean, they do say it doesn't hurt the animal as much as it would hurt you or I, but I wouldn't want to test that out.
No.
I mean, it looks hot, yeah. If it makes you feel better, we've moved a little bit past at least the straight hot iron branding. I mean, they still do that, but they don't exclusively do that anymore.
Yeah, they like spray paint them.
They do a lot of different things now. It is they have the ear tags, they have tattoos a lot of times.
Whoa.
You know,
that hurts too.
It does, but I, you know, it seems a little more, yeah. I don't know, like when the guy giving you the tattoo might have a tattoo as well, it seems a little more
like, okay, I guess.
They have microchip, of course, implants, the way they have for like cats and dogs, RFID tagging. Mm. So, which is especially handy, you know, just at a moderate distance,
scale,
you can scan a whole herd. Right.
Whoa.
Exactly.
Oh, I never thought of that.
Yeah. Depending on the distance you are in, you can set the readers through a little passway and you can basically, you can kind of just inventory the cattle
World.
As they move on through. But you're right. Sometimes they just paint them. I was really fascinated with just the old school, Old West brand. And I mean, you guys know, I'm sure, I mean, it's pretty clear why do we need to brand cattle? Why do we do this? I mean, is
to
it
to say it's mine?
Yeah.
They do the drive and then they would get separated maybe or something.
That's a large part of it. Is it's not just, you know, as I was reading, it's not just to prove this is mine, which it was. That was a big part of it. In fact, in the Old West, you know, there were a lot of jurisdictions where you couldn't sell cattle that weren't branded in somewhere or another. You needed it for the paperwork.
Oh,
you know, it's like, you know, this isn't like, you know, stolen or rustled or whatever.
They used to kill people for
hot,
rustling cattle.
Yeah.
That was a death penalty.
That was a
offense.
Right.
And no one would look twice at you. It's like, oh yeah, I shot some rustlers. It's like, oh good. Yeah, you got rid of those guys.
Yep.
But yeah, as Dana kind of was alluding to, a lot of it had to do with, you know, mass drives of just, if you're feeding with other herds of cattle, you need a way to kind of just keep them straight. Even if everyone's acting honest, no one's out there to steal them. So anyway, you know, there's a whole kind of visual history of just the different styles of brand, you know, the Rock and R and the Circle T. And there's a lot of, you can go research any of this history. Mm. It's very visually interesting.
Old West.
From a design standpoint as well, because you need your brand to be distinct. Because you don't want to have it be confused with the guy, you know, two ranches over. And it's almost like your own little personal trademark, if you will. It's like, this is my brand. You know, a lot of ranchers would have that same brand on the entry to their ranch. So, like, you would put it as you were coming onto the ranch. That would be, like, their emblem, basically, on their front gate.
Is this where the word brand came from?
Yeah. It's branding is an old.
I thought it was the other way.
Branding is an ancient practice.
I thought what we know as, like, oh, McDonald's brand.
No, it's, no. It,
then the cattle then use that word. No. This is from this. Yeah. This is from cows.
That's right. That's or livestock in general. But yeah, yeah, it's from branding livestock. Oh. I mean, virtually every ancient culture did this as well. Yeah. So anyway, we certainly had branding in the Old West. And, there was a lot of trickery that could go on. You know, sort of like as a kid, you know, the old trope of changing the grades on the report card. If you were sneaky enough, you could overwrite someone else's brand, right? You would come up with a brand that maybe had a little bar across it, and you could try and pass it off as your own brand on top of someone else's brand if you were an unscrupulous brander. I don't think this happened a lot. There are stories of it. But
people would be like, yeah.
It's a lot of effort to go through.
Trafalse.
Yeah. Right, the Trafalse. So have you guys heard of Samuel Maverick? Samuel Maverick. Samuel Augustus Maverick. He does have a cool last name. Wow. He is a big figure in Texas history in particular.
Is that where the word Maverick came from?
That is where the word Maverick
is.
Is a Mr. Maverick? he is a Mr. Maverick.
That's where the word came from, though.
The word Maverick comes from Samuel Augustus Maverick.
Whoa.
Even though he was not a proper big-time cattle rancher in the way that
nor
we think of.
Nor
a Top Gun pilot, nor a basketball player from Dallas. Mm-hmm. Okay. Even though he made his money sort of on the East Coast and in the South, he moved out to Texas eventually. He was a politician, a lawyer, a land baron. He was in the Texas legislature. He was a big-time figure. But among his claims to fame is he had a herd of cattle that he refused to brand. He would not brand his cattle. Mm-hmm. Now, you'll read a few different explanations for this. It's either he didn't want to brand them out of humane reasons. Mm-hmm. It seems far more likely that he just didn't care about it. He didn't care enough because he wasn't a cattle rancher.
Oh, okay.
He was a wealthy man who happened to also own some cattle.
What year was this?
This was in the late 1800s. So the word maverick first entered the English usage in the 1860s, meaning an unbranded calf or yearling, because out in the Texas cattle ranching community, it became very, there's an unbranded one. That's one of Mavericks. That's a Maverick cattle. It is not branded, even though it would annoy people because he wasn't playing by the rules. Yeah. And that's where the secondary definition of Maverick came to be, of somebody who flies by his or her own flight plan. That's right. Does his or her own thing. Is a Maverick cattle. That's where it comes from. Is from the man who famously did not brand his cattle.
Wow.
So unbranded became the rule breaker, the Maverick. Yeah. And, you would find them kind of just roaming free. Not only did he not brand them, he would kind of just let them roam around. And if he lost some, you know, so be it. Mm-hmm. He wasn't supervising them directly, even. They were sort of being taken care of for him.
Seems like he might get some free ones that way, too. Like, if people aren't careful about branding them.
There's been sort of some romanticized legends built up around why he didn't it. And I think that over time, it's gotten a lot more politicized than it really was, if you go back and kind of look at what he said about it at the time.
He just wasn't
concerned about it. He really was not concerned about it. But yeah, so that's where the term Maverick comes from. Yeah, entered our language, as I say, in the late 1860s. And then by the 1880s, 1900s, it had already come to mean just an independent-minded person, someone who doesn't – a nonconformist.
Wow. How weird.
And I thought that deserved to be shared with the community at large.
That was not even like in the punch bowl for me.
Yeah, I would have guessed like, Maverick is Latin or something.
Jodie Foster movie.
Yeah.
Everybody shush! William Shatner has something to say.
Cat and Jethro, box of oddities.
What do you do when the woman you love dies? Well, of course you dig her up and you live with her.
Aww.
The show examines weird things.
There are plenty of old photographs from this time period of children out in the streets playing in and among the dead horse carcasses.
Oh, I miss those days. Things used to be so much simpler.
Cat and Jethro.
Then there's the urine wheel, which sounds like a really bad game show.
They've done weird things.
Wheel of Urine!
Cat Cat and Jethro Box of Oddities. That is really mysterious.
Join Cat and Jethro Gilligan Toth for the strange, the bizarre, the unexpected, as they lift the lid and cautiously peer inside the Box of Oddities.
The Webby Award-winning Box of Oddities podcast from Airwave Media.
And I have one last quiz, and I wanted to have some fun. Speaking of movies, movies that have the title West or has the word West in there somewhere, and I want to give it a twist. Okay. So originally, I was gonna redo the plot, but the plot, you know, so these are very famous movies, and it wouldn't be a challenge. So then I was like, okay, well, what else can I do to this? So what I'm gonna read to you guys is the summary. Uh-huh. Of these movies. The summary of the movies have been translated into many languages, then back to English.
All right. Okay.
Specifically, the two languages I chose, I kind of want to do something with, like, oh, the westernmost part of the world. So I was just like, okay, well, let's just choose one in the very beginning of the international dateline and okay. one on the other side.
All right.
So we kind of span the whole world. So it's been translated to French for the French Polynesia and then translated into Maori in New Zealand and then translated back to England.
All right. Okay.
So here, have your buzzers ready. Buzz in with the movie title as I'm reading you the doubly translated
Triply translated, right?
Not that bad. I think Google Translate has improved a lot. Mm. Here we go. Two bomb blasts in the West will save President Grant from the hands of a 19th century creator.
Two bomb...
Dana...
Wild Wild West.
Wild Wild West.
By Willard Smith.
starring Willard Smith, Kevin Kline.
Yeah.
Of course, I got to remember there's West in the movies as well. Yes. Okay.
Nice. The two best hired guns have become two bomb blasts.
Yeah. Mm. Bomb blast. That's good. That's a good double translation. I'm really picking up the French influence on that one.
Yeah.
I don't know.
All right, next one. Two New York soldier battles fall in love, but there is a problem between their partners who are getting closer to problems. Colin.
The Departed.
Incorrect. There is, as a reminder from Alex.
Oh, yes, that's right. West, of course. Oh, of course.
West Side Story.
West Side Story.
I'm sorry. Can you read that one again? Two New York, what was it?
Two New York soldier battles.
Soldier battles.
Fall in love.
That's good.
Gangster?
So it says two youngsters from rival New York City gangs.
Oh, yeah.
I think it just got kind of sold.
Yeah. Okay, soldier battles.
All right.
Yes. Got to have West in it, Colin, remember.
All right. The leader of New York Advisor is mistaken for a government supporter in the group of independent sponsors and is looking for a way to survive.
Whoa.
Old classic.
Okay.
Read it one more time.
The leader of a New York Advisor is mistaken for a government supporter in the group of independent sponsors and is looking for a way to survive.
Hmm.
It's an old classic film.
Mm-hmm. Very famous.
Oh. Okay.
Of the... Chris.
How the West Was Won?
No.
New York.
Oh, New York is actually a good clue. It is North by Northwest.
Oh.
North by Northwest. All right. Oh. This one probably is my favorite one.
Okay.
Oh, geez.
A family of biodiversity wants to go west. They do not know they fall into the trap that is being done by the cats that speak well. Oh. I'll say it again.
Yeah.
The family of biodiversity wants to go west. They do not know they fall into the trap that is being done by the cats that speak well.
West.
It's animated.
Yeah. Is it?
Oh.
Yeah, you can do it.
Chris.
An American Tale, Fievel Goes West.
Correct.
Oh, wow.
Somehow emigre mice family of emigre mice became a biodiversity.
Interesting.
Emigre mice. That common idiom.
Yeah. This one's actually translated pretty well, triply translated. Young teenagers are facing a major problem in the evil world of the First World War.
What is it again?
Young teenagers are facing a major problem in the evil world of the First World War.
Okay, World War. So young, romantic.
Say World War One.
World War One, right.
Dana.
All Quiet on the Western Front.
Correct. Oh. All Quiet on the Western Front.
Oh, good, good.
All right. Two more. When a farmer's love begins with a new woman, she has to prove her confidence when her husband appears to be a famous henchman when he comes.
This sounds familiar.
Yeah.
It's yeah. Let's say it's recent.
Okay.
Not that recent, but recent.
Henchman, right? Okay. So
when a farmer loves begins with a new woman, she has to prove her confidence when her husband appears to be a famous henchman when he comes.
Yeah, what is this?
The answer is A Million Ways to Die in the West, starring Liam Neeson, Seth MacFarlane,
and
Charlize Theron. All right. Last one. We've talked about this before, but this is good. Everybody knows what this is. The robot's work creates the worst and fears of competitors not achieving in the adult playground.
That's good. That's good.
Westworld.
It's Westworld.
Andromeda's train. Westworld.
And that's our show. Thank you guys for joining me, and thank you guys, listeners, for listening in. Hope you learned a lot of stuff about going west. Robots. Many ways to die on the Oregon Trail.
Please watch out.
San Francisco inventions and branding mavericks and cows. You can find our show on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spotify, and on our website, Good Job Brain. And we'll see you guys next week.
Bye. Bye.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.